Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
In Latin America, people still raise guinea pigs like we raise chickens because the Inca did, and they're a good source of protein. Mm-hmm. So in his house, he had a ton of guinea pigs on the floor, and they started disappearing one at a time as we sat there and talked. And I said, Eddie, are you doing this? He said, yeah. And then pop, 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 they all reappeared. And I was like, okay, that's a trick. And then Eddie disappeared. Then, you know, 5 minutes later, he walked back in the door and said, I'm sorry, I had to go.
Michael Peter Langevin has a new book, Travel Tales from Unknown Realities, available on Kindle and Amazon. We've talked before. He's been the CEO of CSI Media, founder of Magical Blend Magazine, Natural Health and Beauty Magazine, Transitions Magazine, and the Echo World Magazine. He's living in New Orleans on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, co-director of Langevin Axelson Marketing and Social Media Promotions. He's available for readings and counseling, lectures, classes, workshops, and his focus is on transformation of consciousness. He studied with shamans, magicians, holy men, gifted psychics. He has a lot of incredibly strange experiences, and it makes for great storytelling.
And I'm making you repeat your name so I don't mess it up, okay? So here we go.
Peter Langevin.
Good deal. Okay, otherwise I'll have to say it five times and still get
it. It's been said wrong around the world.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm in good company then.
Yes.
You used to do Magical Blend, and that's how I connected with you years ago. It was a fantastic magazine in San Francisco. I'm just thinking all the names that dropped through there. Timothy Leary.
I got to hang out with the mostly now deceased, but not all. Our grandfathers and grandmothers of the New Age movement, and that's led into the metaphysics of today.
We read about that and it's kind of far away, but you bring it to life because of your experiences.
You.
One of them was Carlos Castaneda.
That's true. I put him in Travel Tales from the Unknown Realities. And Carlos and I had quite a checkered interaction over years. I started reading him in high school in my living room and practicing finding my sacred spot. And I religiously read every book as soon as it came out and thought the world were many. Greatly influenced my way of thinking and probably had an effect on me going to Peru and connecting with everything I did there. Years later, we were doing the magazine, as I say in the book, and we used to all just take an afternoon and write letters to our favorite famous people and authors and say, we'd love to have you in the magazine. And we'd send out 100 and maybe we'd get one say, yeah. And one day one of my staff came in and said, hey boss, there's someone on the phone who says he's Carlos Castaneda and he wants to talk to you. And I said, oh yeah, okay. The man convinced me he was. And basically Carlos said that once a year he reached into one of his mail bags and picked out three pieces of mail and tried to do whatever they said. And he had picked out ours and a woman from Portugal, from Brazil, who spoke Portuguese, and a woman from Mexico. And we all wanted to interview him. And he said that the woman from Mexico was going to interview him. And then we were going to have it translated to Portuguese and English. And we would have exclusive rights to English. So that helped put Magical Blend magazine on the map. Who doesn't want to be in a magazine that has exclusive interview with Carlos Castaneda? After we cut it into two pieces for circulation, and after the second one appeared, Carlos called me back and he thanked me and he said we did a good job with it. And then over the years, when he would have a new book or something, he'd be in touch with us. And then when Tasha Arabar and his other good friend who wrote a book came out with books, they came to us and we did exclusives with them. Yeah, we hit, Carlos and I went on and on. I ended up writing his obituary for the London Times.
See, that's extraordinary. The reason you're kind of chuckling when you talk is because there have been a lot of checkered contacts with Carlos Castaneda and his history and all of that. At that same time, there are so many people who have learned from his books, because what he said, I think, you know, the basic element in that was there was some truth and some very in-depth kind of secrets that people, they dismiss if they dismiss him categorically.
I totally agree. I think Carlos was a great storyteller and a good writer, and busted open a lot of people's view of reality, because he said there was much more extended realities, separate realities, than we deal with in the material Western world. And just the fact that he planted that, if nothing else, but then he gave techniques, and some of them were very powerful, and he kept putting stuff out there, and he changed many people's way of viewing things and dealing with our day-to-day reality, and opened them up to much wider possibilities. Was he a saint? No.
Yeah, no.
did he have a lot of shady stuff going on here and there and around? I got involved in that too. But overall, I am nothing but thankful that Carlos Castaneda was in the world and honored that he was in my life. I went to Cajamarca, Peru a couple of times, and he actually was born there and grew up there, regardless of what he wrote. And in the marketplace, you can buy Jimson weed, you can buy ayahuasca, you can buy San Pedro cactus, you can buy hallucinogenic mushrooms, all these things that he turned into northern Mexican native people's magic. Some of the roots came from his early childhood.
That's what's so fascinating. Now, I will tell you, I did read one of his books, and it was Magical Passes, and I had,
oh yeah,
I picked it up. We were at Barnes & Noble with my husband, and he was the one who was a fan, and so I was going to hand in the book, and he was kind of looking at something else, so I opened the book to a page, and it talked about something that was a candle-like entity, and what I saw in my house, out of the corner of my eye, he was describing in the book, and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's something to this. So I decided to buy some more books.
No. His books contained great little things that didn't appear in a lot of other places. Definitely not that got the mainstream sales and attention that his did.
Let's just start right there, because this is, if anybody wants to go to bed without any ghosts around them or any spooky things, keep the lights on, because once you hear Michael's story, you might have let's just go right into it. Your grandfather and your father were funeral home directors, right?
Correct.
And you got to participate. Lucky you. What happened to the other two brothers? They skated pretty quick.
Yeah, they did. We all three of us were supposed to take over the funeral home, but they both decided early on that, that wasn't going to work for them. So there I was. Uh-huh. I ended up going to embalming and funeral directing school in Nashville, Tennessee for 2 years before I decided, no, I'm not going to do that. In my early years, my dad had a bad back because he had been wounded in World War II in North Africa, and he couldn't carry bodies by himself, and when he couldn't get anyone at 2 or 3 in the morning, he'd wake me up, and in Lawrence, Mass, which used to be an old mill town, they built tenements for the mill workers with 3 or 4 windy staircases going up to the top and no elevators. So I would have to strap a dead body on my back and carry it down the stairs out to the hearse, and then go back to the funeral home with my father and embalm it. Then he'd give me a ride back to our farm, and I'd wash up and eat breakfast and go to school and look at the other kids and say, none of them had to embalm bodies or pick them up before they went to school. This isn't fair. A couple of kids I went to school with back then said, you didn't talk about that much when we went to school. I was like, would you have?
No. Okay, so you're what, 13, 12, 14?
Yeah, right in there, 12, 13.
Okay, that is not the intro to dead bodies that we would expect, especially at that young age. This trajectory, I think, gives you a little bit more maybe comfort zone with dealing with things that other people would find possibly frightening or intimidating. Does that make sense?
I think it was a huge gift. In ancient Egypt, the priests had to learn to embalm bodies as part of their initiation, because they had to be close to death and understand death and be comfortable with death in order to go on to the greater mysteries of life and teach the masses. And I kind of feel like I was blessed to go through some kind of initiation like that. When I was five, my father brought me down to the funeral home and made me touch a dead body. And I sure didn't want it at 5 years old, but he was a harsh man, and I knew better than to refuse him. And when I touched the body, I swear to this day, an electric pulse went through my arm to my heart, and something changed. I have, you know, I kind of feel like death kind of floats over my left shoulder. And whenever I'm not sure, should I take a chance? Should I do this? I look over my left shoulder and she says, you know, I could take you any minute. So there I am taking another big gambling chance. I've been beat up and mugged in 4 or 5 countries. So,
Okay, so let's go to the quick part, though, the ghost part, because you were collecting bones. Now, this is another interesting hobby, and it seemed very harmless. I don't know.
Everybody has, but I thought it was kind of cool because nobody else had dead body bones in their bedroom.
No.
My brother had given me a big terrarium, a 20-gallon terrarium, and I had had spiders in it in the summertime. And then in the winter in New England, they have to use backhoes to dig up the graves because the ground freezes, and they would catch old graves and spider the bones all over the snow. So I'd go back after helping my father at a funeral, and I'd collect bones and bring them home and clean them up and put them in my terrarium. I thought that was pretty cool until I started having terrible nightmares where it was like hurricanes of voices and people flying around me, and I couldn't understand anything. It went on for days. I couldn't sleep. I was afraid to sleep. And then I was praying when I was awake, somebody help me, make this stop, make this work. And then one night in the dreams, and I wasn't into lucid dreaming then, so I'm not quite sure how this came about, but in my dream, there was this well-dressed, old-fashionedly dressed man, and he started talking. I couldn't understand him either, but then when I focused on him, he said, I am Phineas Goodhue, and I've come to represent the bones. You've done wrong. These beings were all in different states of making peace with their afterlife, and you've disrupted that by taking their bones away from where they were buried. You have to return them to sacred ground so they can go on with their journeys. And I said, what if I don't?
What if I don't?
I don't know. Again, I don't know how I said that in a dream, but I did. And he said, they'll drive you crazy. Yeah. You have no choice. And I said, what do I get in return? And he said, what do you want? And I said, I want you to show me all the secrets and mysteries and unknown things all my life. And he said, okay, you got a deal. And again, I don't know where that came from. It must have been something in my subconscious or past lives or something. But I kind of think Phineas has been in my life ever since. We lived across the street and down the street from cemeteries. And one day I was in the older section of one of the cemeteries reading the poems and the gravestones. And there was one, and I swear to this day, I have a picture of it. Phineas Goodhue.
He wasn't kidding.
He was real.
Okay. Well, see, that's what, you know, when you said immediately, well, what if I don't? Who would say that when you're being accosted by ghosts? And okay, so there's a lot of in you, okay?
Yeah, I come from a family of obviously.
The other thing, when you're dealing with these magical things, you also travel a lot. And one of the things that struck me was the up-close and personal encounters with real magic in South America.
Again, my life has been blessed. Maybe because I'm crazy, maybe because I take a lot of chances, or maybe for other reasons. But When I was in college, I had, in Boston, a teacher who had just spent her summer touring Latin America and loved it, but had fallen in love with Peru. And by the end of the semester, I felt like I didn't have a choice. I hitchhiked in a blizzard from Boston to Miami and took most of the money I had and bought a ticket, round trip ticket for 6 weeks to Peru. And then when I got there, I had $30. You can't live anywhere for $30. And as I was walking from the airport towards Lima, some guy came over, pulled over, and picked me up. He said, "Where are you going, gringo?" And I said, "Oh, downtown Lima." He said, "Way too far. You can't walk. Come home with me, and you can stay the night, and I'll drive you to Lima in the morning." And this lovely man fed me dinner, had all the neighbors over, and asked 1,000 questions about the United States. And they all, when they heard that I wanted to travel down the coast and go into Arequipa and Lake Titicaca, they all had some relative or friend who they wrote down the name and address for me to visit. And people picked me up and passed me from dump truck to pickup truck to beat up car, all over the country. And as I met people, they would say, "When you come back, you're probably going to be wanting to meet shamans. And this is a shaman you should meet in Bolivia." And people gave me contacts. And it was a time, because this was 1983 or something. It was a time in the world, that doesn't sound right, but anyway, that it was a time in the world where the Amazon was starting to be civilized or cultivated or sawed down for mines and lumber and cows. So I caught the cusp of a way of life that's not totally gone, but very much gone.
Yeah.
And every chance I had, I would, for years after that, I would work at a job, save my money. I mean, as soon as I graduated college, work at a job, save my money, and go down to Peru or Brazil or Bolivia for as long as I could, and then come back. And I always meet these just otherworldly shamans who showed me things straight out of Lord of the Rings and Doctor Strange.
We'll get into that in just a minute. First, though, when you mentioned being beat up a few times, there was one time when you knew where you wanted to go, and the guy said, "Sure, I'll take you there," and it didn't end up quite the way you anticipated.
No, I had gone down to Latin America perhaps too many successful times, arrogance, hubris, and I had heard of the Brujas of northern Peru. I heard they did black magic, but they're really powerful and they were dangerous, but under the right circumstances, you could learn a bunch of stuff. Now that whole place has changed. So where they were is very touristy and it's wonderful, but then it was not. And, I went through Cajamarca and I took a bus up to these holy lakes that are there that are part of the whole thing. And I got an introduction to one of the Brujas and he took me to one of the lakes and had me swim so I would wash away all of my past that I didn't need. And then he brought me back to his campsite and he started asking me questions and telling me all sorts of things. I was really intrigued and kept pouring me more alcohol. And after I got very drunk, three guys came out of the bush and they all beat me up. And I woke up the next morning naked, tied to a tree. And fortunately, I mean, they were very generous in their not very generous way. They took everything I owned or had there, but they left me alive.
Yeah.
And they left me just close enough to the road that when I screamed after a few hours, someone finally heard me and stopped and came in. And his first words were, "Oh, not again." So apparently they had done this to a few people.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a ride back to Cajamarca where I knew somebody that owned a restaurant. And he let me stay there until I could get money wired and get to Lima and get another passport and get home.
Well, and he also said that not everybody lived.
That's what he said. He said, you're one of the really lucky ones. You know, they could just as easily cut your throat and left you in the bush. They didn't need to do this.
Yeah.
I don't know what you said or did, but they only do this to some, leave them alive.
Phineas Goodhue, okay? I'm betting. There you go. I'm betting he had something to do with that.
I wouldn't be at all surprised.
So this one's mine. That's okay.
Right. He's got things to do yet. Yeah. I got plans for him.
Okay. So with that though, you also had another experience where you were able to kind of shadow a shaman. You said, "I want to be a shaman like you." And how'd that go?
Vanda Spaghetti. He was one of my all-time favorites. I met some really eccentric and extreme and magical shamans, but Vanda Spaghetti was just too cool for words. I met him in a bar in northern Bolivia on the Amazon, and I had heard that he could make himself vanish. So, you know, I asked him about that. He always bring a shaman a gift, so I bought him a bottle of good rum, and he kind of liked that. He said, "Okay, meet my apprentice here and after dark, and he'll walk you out to..." The shamans always seem to have a magic hut away from the village. His apprentice and I walked into the bush for what seemed like 2-3 hours, bugs, heat, everything. We got there, Eddie made us a cup of tea, and in Latin America, people still raise guinea pigs like we raise chickens, because the Inca did, and they're a good source of protein. Mm-hmm. So in his house, he had a ton of guinea pigs on the floor, and they started disappearing one at a time as we sat there and talked. And I said, "Eddie, are you doing this?" He said, "Yeah." And then pop, 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 they all reappeared. I was like, "Okay, that's a trick." And then Eddie disappeared. He 5 minutes later, he walked back in the door and said, "I'm sorry, I had to go." And I said, "But you didn't ever left." and then he disappeared again. And I had just moved to Northern California, where we had golden thistle. And I've never seen any of that in Latin America. And he came back holding a bundle of it. He said, "Ah, oh, where you live is very beautiful." And I said, "Can you make me do that, Eddie?" And I was standing outside of his hut. And I walked back in, and I said, Eddie, how did you do that?" And he disappeared. And
he disappeared.
His apprentice and I waited, and eventually his apprentice said, sometimes he does this. He doesn't like to tell his secrets. He just likes to show people and help people. Uh-huh. He's probably in town at the bar. Let's go. So we hiked back that long trail, and sure enough, Eddie was sitting at the bar. I said, Eddie, I need to learn your magic. I want to be your apprentice." And Eddie fell off his bar stool laughing. And he said, you would be the worst apprentice in the world. I would kill you. You're supposed to travel the world and write stories about people who do magic, but you are not supposed to be an apprentice. Never.
Never.
Don't ask anyone else that."
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't think he meant he'd kill you on purpose. It would just be like a happy, unfortunate accident, you know.
I'm not sure what he meant. He was an intense guy.
Okay. That to me is a real clue, though, that what he's doing isn't for everybody.
Right. Right. No, and I think that's true of a lot of the shamans. And a lot of magic workers still today, you know, everybody doesn't come here for the same, in my opinion, and I have a lot of those. I don't think we're all born for the same reason. I think some of us come back just to experience life on earth, and you know, going to work 9 to 5 and raising a family, and retiring eventually is just what we came to do. And then there's others who come and somewhere along the line say, "Well, maybe there's more, maybe I want more." And then there's others like myself who obviously come for the whole kit and caboodle. And I think a lot of the magic workers, especially the shamans, they offered it to people who they felt were ready and would get something out of it. I mean, a lot of the times before I could do a ceremony or witness some kind of magic with shamans, they would look right through me. you could just feel them searching your soul and say, "Okay, he's worth taking a chance on."
Well, that's kind of interesting too. Yeah, they kind of know you before you know you and whether or not it's worth the investment.
That's it. And I think I don't expect I'll get enlightened in this life, but I at least I've gotten a little bit of wisdom along the line of experiences. And I think, you know, after a while that this person is just wasting my time and this person's worth taking some time with. And they know that to a much higher degree than I.
Yeah. Okay, so when you were doing your work and you were meeting all of these people, that was rubbing elbows with, I think John Lilly was one of the ones that you mentioned.
Yeah, I got to meet John and his wife before they separated. And John had me swim with the dolphins. But John was an amazing man. I'm really bummed out that his work hasn't stayed with as much as some of the work has. Mm-hmm. His books were so good. And he actually was doing work with the dolphins and communicating with them. I have no question. I spent a bunch of time with him. And he was going over what he was doing. And I mean, it was basic communication, but it was communication. And I got to swim with him and the dolphins. And his dolphins were just scarily friendly and communicative. It was a real magical experience.
I did the float experience because of him wanting to experience right. that other, you know, altered state kind yep. of thing in that. And it's just something, I think people underestimate the value of that quiet time, that solace, that getting away from all of the sounds, all of the electronics, all of that. And that, to me, the fact you got to swim with him, like, wow, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I have my master's degree in social work and therapy, and I do part-time. I do some therapy with kids who are going through tough times. The ones who can hear it, I always try to get them to understand that if they spend a little time each day, if they're religious, praying, if not meditating, that it makes a world of difference on how their lives unfold. And I tell friends and adults that I meet too, just take 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes at night and stop thinking. And just that makes such a difference in what we're open to and how we approach our days.
Well, you also studied, and this says a lot of magic, and that's all throughout the book, Travel Tales from Unknown Realities. The magic thing, Laurie Cabot, I mean, that's pretty yeah. extraordinary.
Yeah, Laurie and I were friends early on. She was one of my first big magic worker friends. I tell in the book how I lived on an early commune my last year of high school, and I was reading tons of magic books, and one of my friends who was reading them too met this woman, and he came down, woke me up, said, "I met a witch. She's going to teach us witchcraft." And I was like, "Oh, great, when?" So we went to this woman's house for months, and she taught us all kinds of basic witchcraft stuff, and it was wonderful. And then she got to a point, and she said, "Well, you know, I've taught you all I know, and I studied with Laurie Cabot in Salem, and she's teaching a class in witchcraft 101. I think you should take it." And my friend said, "No, I've had enough." And so I went and took the class, and Laurie and I really hit it off, and I went to a lot of their coven meetings and events for a long time. So I got to know witchcraft really well. And then when I moved to San Francisco, because I was doing Magical Blend, I got to study with Starhawk and Z Budapest and a number of the big pagan leaders and teachers there in California. So I really, witchcraft in a lot of ways, although I had a lot of entryways to the realms of magic and unknown realities, witchcraft was really one to give me some of the early tools.
Okay, there was one, I think the name should have given you a little bit of a clue, Hydra, the encounter with Hydra.
She was a character. My daughter tells to this day, she says to her friends, "My dad likes to collect characters." And I always do. When we did Magical Blend, I always had a staff full of unusual workers. I guess it was last year of high school, first year of college, I met this woman, and her name was Hydra, and she was very fascinated with witchcraft and magic. And the fact that I had studied with Laurie Cabot was very impressive to her. And we joined a group at junior college, and we all got together doing this. And that was, we started playing with seances, which, you know, like Ouija boards are a great tool, but you got to be careful and you got to have a clue what you're doing. And a lot of kids don't, and we didn't. And his voice came in, and it's spoken Latin and French and English, and that was impressive.
Yeah.
Because none of us there could speak Latin and French, but we knew that it was real. And We had called in my grandfather because Hydra's grandmother had belonged to some group with her that was magical, I guess, she said, and although my father denied. But, but instead, it was this being, and the being said, no, I am a ghost of the Langevin family. I've been in the Langevin family for centuries helping them. And I helped Michael's grandfather, and I've come to help him and this group. And we were all really excited. And you know, we brought him in a couple of other times, and he gave us like hints of how to make our lives better or achieve better things. Then things started getting weird. One of the couples got into S&M and started hurting each other. One of the guys was a protester and got arrested. Another guy overdosed with drugs, another one of them. And so we broke up the group because we thought he might have something to do with it. And then Hydra called me. We broke up soon thereafter. She called me a month or so after we had broken up and said, I had to tell you what happened. My new boyfriend and I were driving down a back road, and you were standing in the middle of the road on fire. Oh. And I said, I don't think so. And she said, no, it was you. And we stopped the car and we got out, and he said it was the ghost, and that he was upset that you and I had broken up. We should get back together. And, or he was going to drive you crazy. People like to threaten that with me. Mm-hmm. And we jumped back in the car and drove away and said, hell no. But I thought I'd better tell you. And on school break, I hitchhiked across Canada, and he kept appearing to me in my dreams or what have you. So when I got back to school, I called him. I was not doing real well. I called him in and said, you know, I'm really not doing well in school, and my writing has really gotten terrible. Oh, I can help you with that. And sure enough, my writing and schoolwork just really jumped off the charts. But then Hydra called me again and said that he had said he was going to kill her and drive me crazy if we didn't get back together, and if I didn't take over the funeral home. And I knew there was something bad here. So I went out to the forest not far from my father's funeral home, and I did a ritual and called him in. And he said, oh, you owe me. You need to do what I say. And I did a banishing ritual that I'd read about in a book. And knock on wood, he's never been back.
I don't know that most people are prepared to have that kind of background to be able to do a banishing ritual.
Okay. No, by that time, I had studied with Laura Cabot. I had read a ton of books. I had seen a bunch of ghosts. I had some stuff.
Back in a few with more travel tales from unknown realities.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Wendy's Coffee House. Travel tales from unknown realities.
Now you're in New Orleans.
And now I'm in New Orleans. I love this city. It's sort of like coming home for me. I've always liked it when I visited it, but living here is just grand. So much magic. There's so many ghosts. There's so many vampires. There's so many artists. There's so many jazz musicians.
Wait a minute. Wait. Vampires? Really?
Well, yeah. They have something called the Vampire Cafe. They you can go online and look up different quasi vampires that have posted. Anne Rice made it famous as a vampire hub, and anyone of that ilk, not anyone, but a lot of people have come here and raided. I was offered to join a group, and it's not in the book. I guess I was putting that in down for my next book probably. Mm-hmm. But basically, it was a bunch of rich people in the Garden District here, and they were. They met after around 11 o'clock at night, and it was a lot like witchcraft rituals, and I had to pass an initiation, and they were going to make me a vampire. And I had mixed feelings. You know, I kind of like daylight and sunlight, and I don't really like eating people, sucking blood. So, but I went, and then eventually they said that I just was too good-hearted for their group. But
achievement at Christmas.
Probably was really lucky for me. You know, I guess I'm a Boy Scout at heart, really.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of true in the blood vampires here in New Orleans.
Okay. Well, that's a word of the wise.
Well, yeah, it is. Now, another story that I don't think I've put in the book. I might have. When I got here, I had a great job lined up, and I spent a bunch of my savings to go visit my family in New England and then drive down here and rent an apartment and then the job, the funding for it didn't come through. So I was kind of desperate to make ends meet. So I took anything. I took a job waiting tables on Bourbon Street until I could find something else. And it was great to get in the heart of New Orleans and get the experience of all the people. But there was one waitress who really didn't like, she was younger and black and she was kind of an unofficial head waitress. She didn't like me. She didn't like the fact that an older white guy was there and getting tips and impressing people on some level. And damn it, if one night after work I didn't come down like just with this rash head to toe, I mean just like not right and itchy all over. And I called one of my psychic friends and said, "Something's going on with me." And she said, "Yeah, someone you're working with put a voodoo spell on you. They don't like you." And I was like, "You didn't even know I was working here. How do you know?" So we worked together, and she took it off and kind of reversed it. And that woman quit the restaurant.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So it worked out good for me. But I had a friend who was teaching school, and I filled in a little bit for her. And all the fourth graders, when we were talking about, myth. So of course I brought up voodoo, and a ton of the fourth graders, their grandmothers were teaching them voodoo or doing voodoo for them at home.
Wow.
I mean, it's pretty widespread here.
What you mentioned, I think, is like a bounce back. You know, what you put out will come back to you if somebody knows how to do it.
Right.
And I think that sounds like that's what happened.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, there's very simple and very complex protective spells you can do where you surround yourself with mirrors and say just that. Mm-hmm. No harm can get to me, and whatever harm is sent to me will go back to the person who sends it. And when that's done with strong intent and serious belief, it can be very effective.
Do you know about the Golden Dawn?
Yeah, I've read a lot about it. Crowley is different than Castaneda, but of the same ilk. Some of his magic is very powerful and very effective. Some of his insights are. Some of his magic and sexual practices were nothing but perverse. But he and the other members of the Golden Dawn did very powerful rituals together and brought in a whole era at the turn of the century, at the same time as Diane Fortune and Bolanski.
Okay, so with Fortune, I believe I have a book from her. Oh, darn, I can't. It was like the classic and how to do different kinds of rituals.
Yeah, and protect, I think she had a book out on protection specifically. Mm-hmm. It's very good as a basic protection. Her books are very simple and entertaining, but they're great. Someone who just wants to touch their toe into the water, she's a safe way to do that. You don't have to get lost in the Northern Mexican Crazy Magic of Castaneda or the Golden Dawn Intense Magic of Crowley. You can just do Diane Fortune and say, yeah, that works for me. Oh, that might be true. Oh, I wonder about that. Oh, I'll look more into that.
I thought it was more light. You know, it wasn't into the dark, negative stuff. Right. It was very...
No, she was. I mean, she touched on the dark, but just to say it was there.
Yeah, which everybody needs to know, okay?
You really do. If you're going to go down this path,
yeah.
it's not a rosy path. There's infinity and madness and a lot of bad people who choose magic as their way of being.
It's a weapon.
Yeah.
That's why I was fascinated with some of your experiences that you... actually lived through. Wow.
Yeah. No, I think one of my favorite was when Castaneda and his people turned on me, because we wouldn't print an exclusive for them. They said they were gonna turn me into a toad and curse all my staff and my family. I immediately called every magic worker I know and asked for help protecting my staff and family. And then I went home and took my kids camping and did spells over them and told them stories around the campfire late into the night for two nights. They still talk about it. Yeah. And then Poppy was had curses put on us from sorcerers.
We remember it well.
Really?
you didn't contact Bigfoot though.
You know, I went camping in Northern California once and I saw, it was in the snowy time, and I saw big tracks that were human-like, and yep. I heard this howl. But to my best endeavors, I could not have a sighting of Bigfoot. No.
Okay, they have a certain. I mean, they are just like anything else. They depend, like the shaman you're talking about. They look at your soul and say, "Are you ready? Or are you? You know, is this something I
right.
need to mess
I,
with?"
My theory is that they and Loch Ness Monster, a lot of the elves and fairies. Live in our dimension and in more magical dimensions, and they come and go, mm-hmm. which explains a lot of their appearing, disappearing.
Yeah,
and yeah. The Bigfoot have chosen that they appear to fairly regularly.
It's telepathic, and I've experienced it. It's telepathic. It's real, and it's just amazing. And there's no way that it works in our linear frame of reference. The way we want to describe things as A, B, C, D, E. No, these are like G, Q, R, X, and yellow.
And real magic usually is wonderful. We were talking about Willie Streber, you and I, mm-hmm. and there's a wonderful story where his wife said, "How come you've seen all these UFOs and extraterrestrials and I never get to?" So he sent out a request, and they were in the hot tub in their backyard, and over them floated a raft of logs tied together with Christmas lights. And Whitley said, "Well, there you go." And she said, "That's not a UFO." And he said, "No, really? Most UFOs are more like that than they describe them in the books."
It's like,
When you get into this magic stuff, I say in the book at the beginning and the end, it's hearing things that you can't hear, understanding things that you can't fully understand. I kind of see reality that we live in as a slice of the onion, and there's all these other slices of other realities. When you get into them, they're fascinating, but we don't have the reference points to totally grasp them or even to define them. So they look like you said, A, B, C, and yellow.
Yeah, I know. It's like, okay, that doesn't help me.
Right.
But it doesn't make it go away either. It's like, okay, you have to learn a new language and you have to kind of reorient yourself to be able to step back from all the flotsam of the A, B, C, D, E, F, G into that other X, Q, A, yellow, black, you know, all of that. And then it becomes a lot more, it's a wider range of reference for the experiences.
Really? I don't suggest hallucinogenics for everyone.
No.
They're not everyone's path. I grew up in the 60s. I spent a lot of time with shamans in Latin America. So I've done quite a bit of ayahuasca,
San
Pedro cactus, whatever.
Research.
But yes, and what they do is they give me reference points in other dimensions so that when I'm sitting in meditation or in trance or listening to music or drumming, I can go back to those reference points because I've been there before.
Mm.
And for me, that is an effective tool, but there's many ways to get there without the hallucinogenics.
And meditation is one.
Oh, meditation is a very, I mean, the depths that you can go to in meditation are phenomenal. And I worked at the Monero Institute for a year, and their binaural tapes get people to a whole different state than they usually go to. And their classes, which are a little costly, but really help people to astral travel, lucid dream, you name it. They've got spiritual classes on it. And they're not the only ones. Mine, what are they called? You know, mind games? No, mine on the West Coast, there's a big group that's working with the one of the children of the Jose Silva, the Silver Method people.
Oh, yeah, Jose Silva.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which his teachings were phenomenal.
Yeah, I've got the Silva books. And the thing with that, it has to do with focusing your mind and learning how to just shut things down and be very clear in your intentions, your thoughts. And that's the first challenge, is to do that.
And that's magic, Wendy. If people get to drive their cars and they get to drive their lives, but a lot of us don't realize that, even those of us who wake up, go to sleep periodically. But with our intention, especially using meditation, if we say, okay, I would like my life to be more magical, I would like to see elves, and we focus on that with pure intent and clear focus, I would guarantee in most cases you'll start seeing elves. There's an extended reality that's waiting to be called to people. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be full of goblins and soul-eating ghosts.
And I think that's the fear that goes along with that. If I do something, it'll be bad or wrong, and I need a protection spell to keep me from wandering over the edge.
Well, that's it. And you know, Hollywood has done wonderful things to entertain us, mm-hmm. but just voodoo alone, the real voodoo that I've run into here in the city, is 9 times out of 10, we're all positive and empowering, but they would have you think that people are sticking needles in and putting curses on everyone, mm-hmm. Because it sells good movies. And they do that with all magic, which fills people with fear of the unknown. And one of the reasons I wrote Travel Tales from the Unknown Realities is I want people to know that, yeah, there's a lot more out there than we think about. But we can go there, come back, have enriched lives, live good lives, and not get totally dysfunctional.
There was another thing that happened to you, which might have been, because of Whitley Strieber helped you guys develop a little bit more. Did you tell him about your UFO experience?
I did at one point, yeah.
What did he say?
He chuckled and he said, yeah, I'm surprised I didn't come back more than once for you.
I think they sunk a hook. All right. When you talked about the thing in your leg.
Or a monitor or something. Yeah, it's still there. I can touch it right now as we talk.
have you not had that x-rayed?
You know, I never did. Probably should.
Gosh, the guy who did those, Roger Lear, who took out those alien implants, and then there's, they're still doing that kind of research. Okay, maybe you shouldn't, just because you've got other things on your plate.
Well, yeah, and I've had it forever. I've had it forever, and it doesn't seem to interfere, so.
No, I like it's just sort of monitoring you. It's just going along and reporting back. Oh, he did it again.
Maybe they've been knocking me. Oh, now it's time to go to Europe. Oh, now it's time to go to Africa.
You are their subroutine, and they're going all over the world looking through your eyes to see what's happening, because you are interesting. Yeah, you're interesting.
Them and Phineas, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just a pawn in the game.
Okay, so if people are interested in doing something like this, I mean, you're talking, we're covering a whole lot of territory, but there is a curiosity, and I am seeing more people who are experiencing things they can't explain and actually sharing it or talking about it. What's the way forward with this? Because the fear is, you're going to be struck down, and that isn't what happens. What happens is all of a sudden you have, in my experience, a greater appreciation for all of the things that are here that you weren't able to connect to, and all of a sudden now doors are opening. So how do you help people with that?
Yeah, I think everybody has to, again, we were talking about prayer and meditation. Everybody has to find their way and get clear. I mean, I'm a big goal setter, and getting clear on what it is I want in my life and what it is I want to achieve. And people don't quite often don't think, oh, I can do that in the metaphysical realms. Oh, I can do that in the magical realms. I would like to learn to be more telepathic. I would like to, and make a list and then spend time on a regular basis meditating on that, reading it, joining meetup groups that are Facebook groups that deal with it, and just slowly bring more of that energy into your life. It's more now than ever. I strongly believe my wife Sophia Karen Axelson and I did the Echo World magazine for 8 years in Virginia, and I really was pleased because Virginia's Southern, once you get away from D.C., is a little conservative, but there's a revolution going on. You know, the cultural creatives, people are really waking up to there's more. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think that as the reality that we've lived in and our parents lived in is kind of crumbling around the edges, these areas of magic and mysticism will be tools that people will use to function better in the world. And that are available to people.
Well, and before you mentioned like the John Lilly experience where he was communicating with dolphins, there are people who communicate with other entities, whether it's a spirit being, a thought form, or an animal, and trees, plants, the whole nine yards. There's so much more conversation around that.
What I really urge is discretion. It's too easy to grab the first forest, the tree in the forest, because they talk good. But people, as they get on this path, have to say, okay, is what this person's sharing good for me? Is it what I want? Is their ego too involved? Are they too after money? Does it feel a little shady? But if it doesn't, there's a lot of good people out there that just get great joy out of sharing what they've learned.
When you first have one of these experiences, all of a sudden it's like the world, wow, look, this is happening. Oh, cool. Well, you know, and you kind of have to, people tell you to shut up.
Yes, yes. I tried to get my oldest brother to take some spiritual classes. He was a jazz musician, and he said, yeah, when they make a movie out of it, I'll go see it.
Yeah, I was going to ask how the kids, you know, because they've been around you. Fortunately, not the funeral home in-depth, you know.
No, I raised them on a farm, but not near cemeteries or a funeral home. My kids are very open-minded, but they're pretty mainstream America. They're both adopted from Peru and are proud to be Peruvian, but really, they could hardly be more American. My son manages an electronics store in San Diego, and my daughter teaches third grade in Northern California, and they're both in good relationships and happy with life. And you know, I couldn't ask for much more. They don't have to. They're probably better off not following in my footsteps.
You've done it for them, okay?
Yeah. There's other people that I have come to me for lessons gone to my workshops and seminars and you know, bother me on a regular basis about, well, I've done this, what do I do next? So if I've inoculated a group of people, I think that's just fine.
Well, and you have several books. I mean, there's one that I really appreciated, the Secrets of the Amazon Shamans. And I think I might've read that at one point. Unfortunately, my memory isn't, I have too many books, but the thing that I do remember, or at least have a sense of, was that there's a lot of content about how things really are. Like you're in New Orleans and you're saying, okay, there's other groups that have been in movies, but that isn't really the way it happens. And so there's a benefit to being up close and personal with a practice as opposed to then hearing it third or fourth hand from a movie.
I'm a firm espouser of go do it. Don't sit home. I mean, reading is great. The internet is great. YouTube documentaries are great. But I love to travel. I love to meet new people. I love to hear other people's about other people's lives and their ideas and their teachings, because, God, that expands me so much.
You said you also had a second book.
I've got four books out with just my name on them, a number of anthologies, two I helped organize and then others I'm in. Secrets of the Amazon Shaman, Secret of the Ancient Incas, and Spiritual Business are my other three books besides Travel Tales from Unknown Realities.
Well, what you said as we were talking was, I don't know if I put this in this book. It might be in the next book.
Yeah, I'm working on two other books. I'm really excited. New Orleans has been really good for making things come together for me in that way. I have a great friend who used to work on Magical Blend, Jeffrey M. Fletcher. He's a very unique artist, very, I don't even have words. My words are inadequate to say surreal photography manipulation, but he's had a couple of books come out in Europe, and we're working together on a book with his photos and my writing about why and how society has forbidden or made sexuality and eroticism so forbidden and difficult for American people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fun to be working on. And then I'm working on another one that's called The Backside of New Orleans. And I've started interviewing some of the people who run occult bookstores, tours, teach classes and what have you, and just getting, okay, well, this is what you tell tourists. What don't you tell tourists? And getting that. And then since I've been here, I've had a as I always do, a number of experiences to do uniquely with the metaphysics, ghosts, and what have you of New Orleans. So I'll probably be putting those in.
I like that. Both of those sound like excellent focuses. Okay.
I've written tons of manuscripts and ended up throwing them away because when I got 3/4 full of finished them, they just were no good. But, four of them made it. And hopefully these two will too.
Okay. Website. Now, I know that there's a WordPress site for your marketing. And
yes, Langevin Axelson Marketing on WordPress. And that tells the basics of what my wife and I do. We've been lucky to work with a lot of talented authors and spiritual teachers, healers, musicians. And because we've promoted our own book, my wife, Sophia Karen Axelson, has published two books that do very well in Sweden. I'm trying to get it to translate them to English. But because we've learned to promote, we help others in promoting them, and we use the internet to a great degree in this day and age. A lot of people who know how to write or teach don't know how to self-promote, and we're pretty good at that. And then I'm in the process of, with your advice, getting a new website, because during COVID, our lives and businesses blew up. We stopped doing the Echo World altogether and had put Langevin Axelson on a slow burner.
You just shifted gears, basically.
I did. We did. I let MichaelPeterLangevin.com expire and somebody bought it. So they wanted me to pay them a couple $1,000 to have my website back. So I'm going to start another one here in the not too distant future. But in the meantime, I'm on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter.
Okay.
And people can look me up all over the place. And in the book, I give my email address, MichaelPeterLangevin@gmail.com, and even my phone number, because I don't have to answer my phone if they call. 434-260-9952. And people can ask me questions, or I do private consultations and I teach classes and workshops and whatever.
And there's another article, magazine, you just mentioned that before we started, there was another magazine that you're going to be able to put some information in. Awareness Magazine, is it?
Yeah, Awareness Magazine, bless her heart. This wonderful publisher editor, Yolanda, took it over, I don't know, I'm going to say 8 years ago, and worked her butt off getting it out, getting it distributed from San Diego to San Francisco. And then COVID came, and like the Echo World, all her advertisers fell away. But she's a determined one, and she kept it going with internet stuff, and she just got out her first issue since 2020, and she plans on doing it on a every third month basis. And it's a great source of what's going on in California metaphysics.
Okay. Well, and that's what you were doing with Magical Blend.
Right. That's what I was doing with Magical Blend. That's what I was doing with the Echo World. And I counted, I think there's only 7 similar magazines to hers and what I've done left standing in the USA presently. And I could be undercounting, but there's only a few left. They've kind of, COVID kind of just wiped the slate clean. So there'll probably be a bunch of new ones popping up before long.
The whole thing is that there's a renewed interest in this kind of information, and there's no one-stop shop. There's some wonderful areas that are, you know, very, very niche oriented, like for Sasquatch or for magic or for astral travel.
But one that kind of touches on a bunch of them. No, I've talked, as I do, to a bunch of people here in New Orleans, and there's a slim that have said just what you said, because they know what I've done, and there's a slim chance that my wife and I might hook up with a group of people here and do something late next year. But I'm not betting on it.
Wow! Oh, come on.
Okay, deadlines are deadly. Okay, they call them deadlines for a reason.
Okay, I know. Believe me, yes. But if you just ignore the deadline and say about, you know, so and so, mostly biweekly.
Right. Yeah. No, that's what we're kicking it around. Like I said, there's creativity here. I moved to San Francisco, and it's the height of creativity. And New Orleans feels like that. There's jazz coming out of the clubs until 3 a.m. There's artists on, you know, all over the place. There's dance and writing groups, and oh my God, it's just wonderful.
Okay. Well, I'm not betting against you. How's that?
Okay, I'm not either.
Okay. All right, so for readings or for information, your books are on Amazon, and the several to choose from. And then to connect with you, you even give your email and phone number in the book. So when people have stories that they would like to share, you might even be open to that too.
Yeah, this wonderful new publisher that picked me up here in New Orleans, Green Chaos, they were kind enough to put it right in the book. And we talked about it. They wanted to make the book expensive because it cost them a lot to produce it. But I convinced them to make the e-book $3.99. So if people want a hard copy from Amazon, it's $29. But if they want an e-book, it's only $3.99.
Either way, it's good content. So
thank you.
We didn't cover all of your stories. We did leave something for people to read.
We did. We touched on a few.
Yeah, just a few. And you've got so many more. Yeah. Some of the hard knocks of the magical world, and then knowing how to get yourself out of a tight spot, and then hopefully having Phineas Goodhue.
That's it. One of the last stories in the book is The Last Dance in Magic Land. We called where we lived in Virginia because it was this idyllic place. We had this cabin treehouse that overlooked this large field and garden near a brook in the woods, the end of the road. And we just had a wonderful time there while we did the Echo World. And one of the last nights we were there, I had this dream and a number of magical creatures I had made contact with while we were there and before were in the dream. And damned if, as the dream was ending, Phineas Goodhue wasn't sitting on a tombstone saying, "See, it's all coming about."
And that's a story, about the house. And it made perfect sense that it was time to leave.
Yep. It really was. it did its season wonderfully. And when something does its season, I'm a Capricorn, so I hate to give things up or end things, but I've kind of learned over the decades that, okay, when something's done its season, it's time to move on.
Thank you. The book is a delight. I really enjoy your stories, and you have a way of storytelling that you get all of this information without, it's like you get hooked. You want to read it and you don't want to stop. And
thank you. That's ideal.
Yeah.
Well, my wife's a great editor too. So she put the final touches on it that made it sing and dance.
Excellent. Well, Sophia, yes. The picture you guys have on Facebook, you have a video there, and you have a picture there too. I love that picture. I think the anniversary picture in December.
Uh-huh,
maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So
we enjoy each other a lot. I'm real lucky. That's a whole nother story. We met on a bus in Peru, and I courted her online 2 years while she lived in Sweden and I lived in all over the place.
Yeah. And it's amazing. You were supposed to meet. That's the whole story.
Obviously.
And to use the word, it does sound magical. Okay. So that is your life. That is like the core that runs through everything that you do, is that magic.
Seems to be.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for...
Oh, Wendy, your pleasure.
I'm going to put links in the description for the show so you can get information on the show description, or just do a Google search and you'll find. And Michael Peter Langevin.
Langevin. There you go. Well done.
Again, the book, Travel Tales from Unknown Realities. Tales of Magic, Unexplained, and True. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.